Welcome to Appointed. Today we are talking with Chloe Halpeny about the youth perspective on basic income. Chloe is the co-chair for the Basic Income Canada Youth Network. During her master's degree, she studied basic income, and in fact, her dissertation focused on the experiences of those who took part in Ontario's basic income pilot back in 2018. Thanks for joining us on Appointed, Chloe.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
That's great. So, Chloe, you are part of a group of young people that established the Basic Income Canada Youth Network. Could you tell us a little bit about this network and what it's trying to achieve?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're calling the Basic Income Canada Youth Network, or BICYN, really started in 2019 as a small group of young people who were just really passionate about basic income. There was me, who had studied it in my master's degree, some people who had had experience through politics or through community work. And it was just really a handful of us who started having these regular conversations over Zoom, just to chat about basic income, what it might mean to get young people more involved in the movement. We had been connected with other basic income groups and had their support, like the Basic Income Canada Network, for example. But we didn't really formalize until COVID-19. And the pandemic really pushed us into actually being what we're now calling the Basic Income Canada Youth Network, whereas before we were just a group of us having chats about basic income online. When the pandemic started and when basic income all of a sudden was starting to be more of a part of everyday conversation and we were hearing people talk about it more, it really occurred to us that it was important for young people to be included in those conversations when basic income was getting so much attention. So it was really March, April, I think we had our first public meeting in April of 2020, where we invited young people who were just interested in having a discussion about basic income to sort of a public Zoom call, as one does during COVID-19, where we just said, you know, we're a group of young people, we're interested in chatting about basic income. If this is something that you want to learn about, talk about, come join us. And then things really sort of took off from there. So we have a steering committee and several members under 35 across the country who support a basic income and are advocating to make it happen in Canada. So since starting with those kind of initial information discussion webinars with just sort of open calls to young people, we co-wrote a letter along with Senator Mary Lou McFedrin's Youth Council supporting the 50 senators' letter for a guaranteed livable income that got support from youth groups across the country. We recently finished a youth letter writing campaign alongside some other partners encouraging young people to send letters to their member of parliament calling for a guaranteed livable income from a youth perspective. We've been doing lots of different webinars with partners like the Ontario Council for International Cooperation. We did a webinar for Engineers Without Borders Canada. Really just been going full speed ahead in the past couple of months as basic income is on everyone's minds. And ultimately what we're trying to achieve is, unsurprisingly, a basic income. We're specifically advocating for a basic income that is grounded in our values as a group, which is that we want a basic income that is available to everybody who wants it and who needs it. That is, and this is important, that is complementary to other programs and services. So not a basic income at the expense of other really important things. A basic income that's sufficient, so not something, you know, part of the problem of social assistance right now in Canada is that the amounts are really too low to survive on, and also one that's grounded in dignity. Alongside wanting a basic income, we also want to make sure that youth are involved in conversations around the push for basic income and also policy more broadly, but specifically basic income, because we know that these are conversations that youth are often left out of. So this also sort of lends itself to a lot of intergenerational work, where a lot of what we're doing is working with other basic income groups and a lot of sort of older folks who have been advocating for basic income for a long time and sort of building those bridges within the basic income movement. And our kind of three-part mission that we've identified is education, so wanting to help inform young people and have them feeling confident about what a basic income is and what it would mean in their lives. Community building, so sort of fostering this community or group of young people within the basic income movement, and activism, so actually empowering young people and equipping them to take their knowledge of a basic income and advocate for it to mainly elected officials and parliamentarians.
That's great. Thank you, Chloe. And so what has the youth network learned from youth across the country vis-a-vis basic income? And what are things you've learned that have maybe surprised you?
Yeah, I think sort of maybe not necessarily a surprise, but something that's become really apparent to us throughout this is that young people are really open to the idea of basic income. They're really excited about it, and they're ready to be engaged in the movement. So this isn't from us specifically, but there has been recently public opinion research in Canada that has shown that young people are more likely to be in favor of a basic income. And I think that we have a real sense of the fact that there's a lot of untapped energy among young people when it comes to basic income, that when young people have started to be involved in this conversation, they're excited to do things, that they're excited to get involved in the movement, that they want to be part of this change, but that they just need to be sort of given something to do or provided a meaningful way to get involved. So we've encountered a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of young people who really see the need for this, whether that's from their own lived experience or the lived experience of loved ones, or just because they recognize that a basic income is a path to a more equitable and more just future. Mm-hmm. And I also think another thing that I've found really interesting in this work so far is just sort of the new perspectives or new cases or rationales for basic income that we've heard the more young people that we've spoken with. So a few months ago, we hosted a kind of a brainstorming session where we asked youth across the country to sort of come to the virtual table and articulate what the youth case for basic income is. And we heard things like, you know, youth can't afford to rent or buy houses. The costs of tuition are rising. Youth are concentrated in precarious work. But we also heard things that, you know, were maybe less commonly articulated cases when it comes to youth and basic income. So we had one high school student who mentioned that kids coming from lower income backgrounds at their high school were bullied at school because they couldn't afford the new or the nice clothes. And what would a basic income mean for young people or young students that were coming from lower income backgrounds that were bullied as a result of that, which, you know, isn't the main case, youth case for basic income, but it's not something that we had necessarily thought of, or provincial distinctions. So we had a couple people, specifically from Manitoba and Saskatchewan, who brought up that those were two provinces that had a really high proportion of youth in care, and how a basic income might be really beneficial for youth that were transitioning out of the foster care system with no other supports. And, you know, I think that's a case across the country, but it's especially a case for provinces where that's more of a case than in other provinces. So I think just the fact that, you know, youth are really, really engaged, enthusiastic, excited to get involved, but also the more that we're talking with other young people, the sort of what that youth case is for basic income is really dynamic and really multifaceted and really exciting, I think, and does a lot to enrich what sort of that bigger case or argument or justification for basic income is.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So kind of on this note, in the op-ed that you wrote in the Ottawa Citizen entitled "Halpiny, Youth Voices Are Needed in the Basic Income Debate," you talk about this myth around basic income that often targets youth. This idea that if young people receive a basic income, they won't want to work, and instead they will just want to lie by the pool. What is your response to this kind of argument?
A lot of responses to this kind of argument. And so for context, the quote in this article that you're referring to is back in April, there was a senator who got up in the Senate to speak specifically about the Canada Emergency Response Benefit, about CERB, and basically said that giving people, and specifically giving young people, money would act as a disincentive to their participation in the formal labor market. So the idea that when you give people money, that they'll just lay by the pool or be lazy or whatever as a result of having that kind of quote unquote free money. And again, while the senator was specifically talking about CERB, this is kind of the same argument that gets tossed around about basic income as well. Sort of that idea of giving people money and that they won't want to work as a result. And there's lots of things, there's a lot of things wrong with that. And when it comes to young people in particular, which I think, you know, you hear that if you give young people money, if you give young people a basic income, that they will just play video games or that they will lay by the pool or they might use it to travel or spend it on, you know, quote unquote, irresponsible things. But this argument, I think, is really a result of deeply ingrained stereotypes about younger generations being less productive or having it kind of easier off or being lazy or entitled. And these stereotypes aren't just offensive, but I think that they're pretty unfounded. So I was born in 1995. I'm kind of the younger side of millennials. My generation is the most educated in Canadian history. So many young people around my age are trying to now find jobs for the first time, right in the middle of a pandemic. And sort of on top of all of these things, like, again, we're educated, we're not lazy. We are facing very different situations societally, economically, than our parents, than our grandparents faced. And then we have all of these kind of stereotypes working against us all the time. So when I wrote that op-ed, there was a lot of pushback on social media and specifically on Twitter, as it happens, where people told me to go out and get a job and get out of my parents' basement. And why don't I spend this time working on a resume, which is, you know, both infuriating and kind of funny. Firstly, because I do have a job. I'm not, at least right now, someone who would personally benefit from a basic income, but for whatever reason to these people, it's unfathomable that I would advocate for something that wouldn't explicitly benefit me. But also when I look around at my friends and colleagues my age, I don't see what these people on Twitter commenting seem to see. I see young people who are ambitious and excited and want to get a job that they love, want to be engaged in activism, want to be volunteering in their community. But really, there are systemic barriers that young people are facing, allowing them to do a lot of these things. Like, so research from basic income pilots have quite consistently shown that giving people who need it a basic income does not have significant impacts on labor market participation. So the idea that we're going to see this mass exodus from the labor market, not just by young people, but from anybody, is flawed. We are likely to see people leave jobs that are unsafe, that are low paid, maybe that they're overqualified for, people who might be returning to education or training because they can finally afford to do that. But the reality is that the vast majority of people, I think, and young people included, do want to work. People like to feel that they're contributing. They like to take pride in their jobs. I don't think that we as people, young people included, are inclined to just sort of sit at home. But there's, I mean, and there's other problems with this as well. So secondary problem with this argument around laying by the pool, again, kind of attached to that idea that you'll lay by the pool instead of going to work. This argument assumes that paid work is accessible for everybody. So when you think about the fact that not everybody can work, when you prioritize paid work as the end all be all, you end up telling everybody from people with disabilities who can't work to single parents who are facing this impossible decision between paying for childcare and going to get a job that will then pay for that childcare, that you're telling these people that their realities and that their lived experiences don't matter because just get a job. And then there's also another problem with that argument, which is in-work poverty. So the assumption that, you know, if you just got a job and you went to work, you wouldn't need a basic income, that you'd have enough money. The assumption that working gives you enough money to survive on is also flawed. I think I pulled these from 2015, where 70% of Canadians who were poor were already working. So again, the idea that poverty and having a job are sort of these two mutually exclusive categories, it's just not our reality. So my final, I'll finish this rant soon, I swear, but this is, it's kind of infuriating. But again, the argument of laziness and laying by the pool or whatever, I think there's something there where we only care as a society when certain people are lazy. We are really happy to label young people as lazy or poor people as lazy or people with disabilities as lazy. But it's almost like you get a free pass at taking a break or relaxing or whatever you want to call it, self-care, when you don't fall into any of these categories. So when wealthy people decide to go lay by a pool, then that's a vacation and that's okay. But I think that this sort of being lazy, again, there's all these other problems with sort of how we think about work and who has access to work and who for whom work is empowering. But I think there's also the idea that being lazy is kind of a bit of a luxury, and that might be a controversial thing to say, but I think there's some deeper things to think about there about who gets a free pass at laying by a pool and who does not.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for that, Chloe. Now, there have been many pilots and studies that have been conducted on basic income around the world. Have any of these studies considered or focused on the effects that a basic income program would have on youth?
In terms of basic income pilots or studies, they have reached youth in the past. So for instance, the prematurely canceled Ontario pilot did have a lower age limit of 18. So young people were eligible for that. They did take part. And in sort of my research and in my dissertation, I did hear participants there talk about things like student debt and sort of the idea of for younger participants a basic income allowing them to quote unquote catch up with other people their age by getting a car for the first time or things like that, things that were sort of viewed as where you should be at when you're in your kind of 20s or 30s or whatever. But this wasn't a main focus of my research. And there hasn't really been a lot of kind of youth-specific information or research or focus when it comes to basic income, at least not that I know of, which I think is kind of part of why we, as the Basic Income Canada Youth Network, came about as well, recognizing that there was a big gap. Not that we're going to be conducting all of this basic income research, but that those aren't two links that have been really explicitly drawn, either in research or in advocacy. Mm-hmm. At least not often. I think thinking about sort of the research behind basic income and youth, I think it is worth mentioning the Canada Child Benefit here, which isn't the type of basic income or guaranteed livable income we're talking about here because it is only for people under 18, but it has been characterized as a type of basic income for children under 18 just because it reaches so many people and has a lot fewer conditions than other income support programs that we see across the country. So the Canada Child Benefit has had significant effects on child poverty in Canada, has really reduced child poverty. And that's an area where Canada has actually performed quite poorly compared to other high-income countries. And when it comes to reducing child poverty, we know that the effects of that are widespread both in the short and long term. So we know that experiencing poverty in childhood has implications in terms of poor health, poor education, poor employment outcomes, etc. So it's worth mentioning that there, even though we're not talking about pilots, just that it, in some ways the Canada Child Benefit is a very young person basic income already. Mm-hmm. So in terms of why that focus hasn't been there in terms of pilots or studies or research, I'm not totally sure. I think it's just kind of, again, a matter of that it hasn't been a priority, that we know that these are conversations that youth are often left out of. And that's not new. That's like a systematic issue of, I think, youth not being adequately engaged in sort of policy discussions or discussions that affect their lives. And I mean, I think it's also probably part of the fact that we are talking about pilots. So when we're talking about basic income research, we're not talking about something that's been nationally implemented. We're sort of working on bits and pieces and pilots that have reached a couple thousand people here and there. So, I mean, it might also be an issue of sample size and whether you actually have enough young people participating in a given pilot to draw significant conclusions. But I'm kind of just guessing on that one.
Right. So some of the questions that often come up when talking about a basic income are the design questions. You know, what will a basic income actually look like? Who will qualify for this program, etc.? Since we are talking about youth, I'm curious to know how a basic income program might take into account the income of the parents of whom certain young people might be financially supported by.
Yeah, that's a great question. And first of all, I think definitely not one that I am I'm an expert on. So, and I think anyone that's part of our network will sort of say that we don't have all of the answers here. And I think it's important to note that. I think that any basic income program needs to be inclusive of youth and youth perspectives throughout the design, throughout the implementation, throughout the evaluation. So we have some ideas as like a small steering committee, but inclusive policymaking means that there needs to be ongoing conversation between parliamentarians and people who would be part of a basic income, including diverse young people, and especially those with lived experiences of poverty throughout this process. So from an incremental perspective, we see basic income as sort of filling the age gap in income security programs now, which we see sort of the Canada Child Benefit for those under 18, guaranteed income supplement for those over 65, and those 18 to 65-year-olds in the middle sort of left out, including the younger end of that, which is what we're talking about right now. In terms of sort of some of the design questions that we've thought about or we've talked about as a group, I think obviously that we think a basic income should at least have a minimum age of 18. I don't think that there's a big appetite for this in Canada, but I think we would almost definitely not be in favor of a basic income that, for example, only people over 25 were eligible for. And again, I don't think that this is something that people are talking about. But again, when you think of those stereotypes about young people laying by the pool and living in their parents' basement and those things, I think that it is important that we make sure that we're being clear that we mean a basic income right from age 18. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's also a, I think that there's also a very good case to be made for including youth under 18 in a basic income. And we don't have kind of a formal position on this, but I think it's something that we're continuing to have conversations about just because it is important. So the Canada Child Benefit is administered to parents for young people under 18, but there are also youth under 18 who are not reliant on their parents for income. So youth who are emancipated from their parents, for youth who maybe leave home before 18 for post-secondary education, street involved or homeless youth. So I think that there are further conversations to be had about how we fill the gaps in income support for those who are like the younger end of youth, like under 18 youth, who do often need income support, but maybe wouldn't be included in a basic income program designed for adults 18 and over. So again, we don't have a formal position on this, but I think it's an important design question to be considering, especially because we talk about basic income as sort of filling gaps. And I think that there may very well be gaps that are left with a basic income. I think no one's arguing that a basic income is a silver bullet that will fix everything. But I think that that sort of youth who could use a basic income but would maybe be under 18, that's an important conversation to have.
Right.
So as for parents supporting youth and what is to be made of young people who are dependent on their parents for income. So I think that that's a good question. Again, not one that I have the absolute answer for. I think that even if parents are giving their adult children money, that income is still being taxed and likely at a higher rate as part of that parent's income than if it was their child's income. So, I mean, it's not like that's just being money that's kind of floating in the world untaxed or unaccounted for. I think it's fair to say that in an instance where we had a basic income or a guaranteed livable income, that we might see fewer parents choosing to financially support their above 18-year-old youth if those parents knew that their children would have a safety net through something like a basic income, that they wouldn't necessarily have to rely on their income. I do think that this is sort of ultimately something that would be in the hands of policymakers, probably our friends at the Department of Finance or Canada Revenue Agency to flesh out further. But I also think that in this conversation, when we think about what about the young people who are reliant on their parents for income, it's also sort of helpful to think about this in a way that kind of shifts what that vision of dependence or independence is. So yes, there are young people who might receive financial support from their parents, but there are equally young people who provide financial support to their parents or to children of their own. So, mm-hmm. you know, young people are financially dependent often, but often they can also be financially supporting other people as parents, as caregivers, in these other positions as well. So I think just a helpful thing to think about when we're talking about youth and dependence and income support and things like that. So the final piece that I'll say around design questions, which has come up, I think, through this conversation, but is super important, I think, in any discussion of a basic income, is, again, the idea that for people, for youth included, a basic income is not going to be this magic silver bullet for anybody. So I believe that youth do need a basic income, but I also think that a basic income will work for youth insofar as we continue to advocate and call for pharmacare, for lower tuition rates, for all of this, for this host of other programs that we know will also have huge positive impacts on young people's lives and that are really important to young people. So that's less of a design of a basic income particular, but just to say that a basic income needs to be considered as part of a suite of larger programs for everybody, but for young people included.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, thank you for that, Chloe. Before I let you go, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, if you have anybody that's listening, that is a young person, we define youth as 35 or younger. It's a generous definition, but one that we're happy with. If you have anybody listening who is 35 or younger in Canada, thinks that they're in favor of a basic income, wants to chat more, wants to join our network, we would love it if they did. We're always seeking new members and there's always ways to get involved, especially right now when this topic is so on people's minds, we need all the help that we can get. So hopefully people can subscribe to our newsletter and then become members of the Basic Income Canada Youth Network if they want to. But I think that's my main thing. If people want to join us, we would love that.
That's awesome. Thank you, Chloe. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your knowledge. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.